You're listening to the Protest Talk, unless home is the mouth of a shark. Hello and good evening, everybody. Welcome to the second edition of our Protestgespräche series, the Protest Talk series. My name is Laro Bogen. I'm part of the curatorial team here at Camp Nagel, and I'm so glad that you all came.
Hi, my name is Alina Buchberger. I also work here at Camp Nagel, and I just want to address a couple of words before I pass over to this amazing panel. With this Protest Talk series, we are trying to create a regular space at Camp Nagel, which has already for a long time been going on, but it's continuing to give platforms to activists to speak about their fights and protest movements, and also their political demands. And many of these protest movements that we want and will address in this series have really been going on for decades, even for centuries. And we believe that it's very important to understand this history of the fights so that we can learn from them, that we can maybe also change strategies, keep some really useful strategies, or criticize our predecessors in these battles, and also, just transfer activist knowledge and create connections. We had a first edition of this series in April where we talked about the disabled movement in Hamburg from the 80s until today. And today we will talk about the right to asylum and the right to stay.
Yeah, and today is the second day of our new season that stands under the claim Still Open House. And with this claim, we want to renew Camp Nagel's commitment to the century of migration and to the importance of mobility as the normal standard situation for all human beings. So as you've probably noticed, this talk is not only a live panel discussion, but is also being recorded and will be online later to listen to. And I say hello to all our beautiful listeners in the future. The title of this talk is taken from a poem by the British Somali writer Washan Shaya, and it says, or a few lines of it say, no one leaves home unless home is the mouth of a shark. We've also printed the poem out. It's close to the entrance, so if anyone wants to take a copy later, that's fine. So to just introduce shortly this panel, we are, I think, all witnesses to the dissolution of the asylum law by the EU, and also to this contrast that we have to the so-called welcome culture in 2015. And the struggles for the right to asylum and the right to stay seem really to be an endless, exhausting fight. So today we came together to reflect, debate, and also remember and listen how we can remain active and resistant and share our activist practices. The panel will mostly be in English, but you're also welcome to ask your questions in German later. Then I have to announce that Umid, who was announced as the moderator, unfortunately had to cancel due to sickness, but we are incredibly thankful to Mohamed Pori, who jumped in at 4 o'clock this afternoon. Thank you so much for taking over. And Mohammed was born in 1987 in Sari, Iran, is a filmmaker and curator studying film at the HFBK Hamburg. He is mainly focused on collective trauma, fascist potential in group dynamics, and rewriting memory. Thank you so much for coming here, and I hand over to you to introduce the panel.
Thank you very much. Good evening and welcome to this panel. As you heard, they asked me very spontaneously. I'm already sorry for in any case of blackouts. So, but I think it's not going to happen tonight. I hope so. I'm going to start with Lucy Maybling. Lucy Maybling is a sociologist from Sheffield University. Lucy, can you tell us about your field of work and how you're involved with issues around migration and asylum?
Hi, everyone. So I work at the University of Sheffield in the UK. My research is about the politics of asylum, mainly in the UK, and I've got a project which is about small boat channel crossings and the government response to that. But I'm also interested in the legacies of colonialism in framing how we talk and think about asylum and displacement in Europe. And at the University of Sheffield, we have a migration research group and we do a lot with activists and community groups and things like this, community study days to learn from each other from the different positions we occupy. I think that's probably enough for now. Yeah.
Thank you. Larry McCauley, you are editor-in-chief and founder of Refugee Radio Network. Could you also please shortly tell us about your work and your involvement with a given issue?
Well, my name is Larry McCauley. I'm the founder of Refugee Radio Network and the co-founder of the Migrantpolitan Project here in Camp Nagel. Yeah, I've been in the migration pool for more than 15 years as a migrant myself in Europe. So with Refugee Radio Network, which we started in 2014, which is still ongoing as an online radio platform for refugees and migrants. Along the years, we started rough. It's been rough along the years. But today we have a model, we have a platform that enhances the voice of migrants and refugees in Europe. Our work cut across not just Germany, but the project was founded here in Germany, here in Hamburg in 2014. But then we've transited moving between various European countries where migration has been a phenomenon. And let me just stop there and then we continue the discussions later.
Sure. So we go to Sadia. Sadia, you're an activist and community organizer for Women in Action. How do you organize within your group and what is your role actually?
My name is Sadia and I come from Somalia. I'm a refugee here who's working in a Women in Action. I'm active this group 7 years and we are doing a lot of things. We meet like the month 2 times. We are women who speak ourselves and our friend. We are not only women. And yeah, maybe I continue later what we are doing.
Sure. Ilka, welcome. You work as an advocate for people who seek asylum in Germany. Can you share a little bit more about your work and your involvement?
Well, first, thank you for inviting me here, as we have lots of lawyers. And thank you. Yeah. I'm working in this field of migration law for like 22, 3 years, and I'm specialized in asylum law for LGBTIQ plus people, but my main field is working with Spanish-speaking people in migration law in general, and penal law, and the crossovers of criminalizing migrants. And I'm always involved in projects, and we have this one wonderful project, which I would like to share with you here. It's like we are asking for an expression of respect, the reasons why LGBTIQ plus people migrate or come here. And we are asking the Senate to create a space for queer refugees in Hamburg from the first moment when they ask for asylum and not months later. But I will explain that
okay.
later.
I would like to continue with actually the colonial continuity as a background. I have to think about it a lot myself. Especially I remember just like a few years ago, it was like 2018 or 2019, I was listening to a podcast with Achille Mbembe. And there was a French interviewer who was interviewing a member and he was asking him, like, How do you explain these massive, you know, waves of migration are coming to Europe from especially Africa through the Sahara route and so on? And Mbembe was just like, I don't understand. I've never understood why you Europeans are so surprised about actually the waves of migration. What is so surprising about it? It's not a story that it started just like 10 or 15 or 20 years ago. It's about 500 years of historical background. So Lucy, I would like to ask you, I mean, you are invited as an expert on colonial legacies within the realm of human rights, among other things. Would you like to share what you have prepared to help us understand this complex issue?
Yeah, I mean, I suppose the way that I understand the kind of reaction now to refugees, the kind of shock and amazement that Mbembe's talking about that way, is it so surprising that when the Refugee Convention was being negotiated, the major global powers at that time were colonial powers, and they were really not happy with the whole human rights framework. The idea that it would apply to everybody, the idea that it would apply in their colonies, where they were clearly major human rights violators. And so there was a lot of work to insert clauses into initially the human rights conventions and then the refugee convention to have specific territorial applicability so that you could exclude a lot of people from the right to asylum. So I've looked at that a lot in the case of the UK, and in the years following kind of almost being shamed into signing it, not wanting to look bad compared to the Russians, wanting to embarrass the Russians, so signing, that's why the UK basically signed. But then in the years after, being able to live with it because it only really counted for Europeans, right? And then it's in the period in which you start to see post-colonial migrants, people displaced, because of many conflicts, but being able to travel, for example, by air, so much more easily to come to Europe and even as far as the UK, which is quite remote from any conflict zones. That's when you start to see this proliferation of asylum laws, a total moral panic about refugees. If there are more of them, they can't possibly be real refugees. They must be economic migrants. And that's when you get a kind of cascading series of laws and interventions, which is really a kind of racist panic. Yeah.
Sure. I mean, the other thing that I personally think is just like for Europe, European institutions, states, the colonialism is something which is belonging to the past, which is for a lot of countries in global thought is an ongoing process of, you know, it's just like an open wound. And in a lot of countries we see it right now, if we, in the case of, I mean, a lot of Western African countries, I mean, what had happened just like in Niger, I mean, we saw, it was just like a backlash of this colonial history actually. And thank you so much. And I'm commenting too much. You raised many interesting issues, actually. I would like to give Larry, Sadia, and Ilkan an opportunity to react on what we have just heard and about these colonial continuities on this issue.
Okay. There's a lot to unpack here. The colonial legacies here. The problem of this migration phenomenon, the real problem is with Africa. The minute they are African people, hundreds of them, probably thousands, on a boat, cross into Western society, it becomes a problem. All the news, reels, and mainstream media pick on it like no other thing. 2 million, 3 million Ukrainians can walk into Europe, it's okay. But when it's just a couple of thousands of Africans, it's a big problem. They come in to take over. 7,000 people will come and take over the whole European Union continent. That is how ridiculous people think in this society. And then you vote in all these ridiculous politicians who come and legislate nonsense. I'm sorry to use those vulgar words. So for me, as an African person, as a black person, I'm really hungry. I've been hungry for 15 years. And I said, since 2017, being in this migration struggle, I don't want to have these discussions anymore, because it's like Humpty Dumpty sat on a wall. It's a hopeless case. They don't listen. They will never listen. So all this mess you see going on is a geopolitical struggle. Who controls what? You mentioned, you made reference to Niger. The problem in Niger is French, is France. France has been holding all its colonial territories at an hostage situation for many, many years, even post-colonialization. They are becoming poorer because of France, but nobody attacks France. Everybody attacks the black migrant, the black poor people. Oh, yeah, they kill themselves. Oh, Africans are like that. Yeah, they never. But then there are people who create those atmosphere for the society to be insecure. So until the society here in Europe, for example, when Africa was cut up, there was no single African person there to be part of the decision-making body. And then you want a better result. Of course not. So the minute you exclude people and decide for them, then you have what we have today. But then if we want change, we as a society, including the European society, because you pay taxes and they use your tax money to foment all sorts of trouble all over the world. I keep on repeating this for 15 years. Everybody thinks I'm a terrorist or I'm an extremist, but that's the reality. And then you do not use your power to effect change until you see tragedy on your mainstream news. And if they choose to publish those tragedies, then the European, the activist society, the civil society now starts reacting. Because civil society goes to sleep for a very long time. It jaywalks. All of a sudden, it wakes up and bounces back and wants results. But that's not the way it works. It takes continuous efforts to effect change, change in all atmosphere of life. But then if we relax, we are, oh, I have my job, I have my pension, it's all good, it's all okay, nothing is going to be okay. People will come. I said it 10 years ago, I'm still going to say it. Migration is a human phenomenon. Thousands will continue to come. So whether you like it or not, wake up to the reality. Thank you.
You wanted to say something, Lucy,
yeah.
Before
she just... I just wanted to kind of ping between the things that you were saying, because I brought with me some of the words from a speech that was made by Joseph Borrell, the European Union's foreign policy chief, last October. And he said, Europe is a garden. We've built a garden. And the rest of the world is not exactly a garden. Most of the rest of the world is a jungle, and the jungle could invade the garden. In Europe, everything works. It's the best combination of political freedom, economic prosperity, and social cohesion that humankind has ever built. And we can see how this idea of the garden and the jungle are colonial ideas of civilization.
And he's still speaking for you Europeans in that parliament. You didn't kick him out because of that statement.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's still there till today, that old man.
Yeah, so Europe
is... to kick him out.
Is white and civilized and everything works. And then recently he said, the issue of migration pressure has been increasing mainly due to wars. Not the war against Ukraine. It's the Syrian war, the Libyan war, the military coups in the Sahel. Mm-hmm. So not millions of Ukrainians who've been resettled across the EU and borders have been opened and amazing protection schemes suddenly developed at the drop of a hat. But the problem of Africans... I thought that was a good link between what you said.
As long as it's African people, it's a big problem. Migration becomes a problem.
Well, the problem, I just want to continue, like in law, it's the people from, it's the refugees, it's African people, as you say. It's like in Germany, the system, the migration law and the refugee law is under the responsibility of the Minister of the Interior. It's everywhere. And their role is protection of danger. And I always say, once somebody I learned law with, he was telling me it's like migrants are being treated like little atomic nuclear how do you say? You produce energy. It's a nuclear whatever danger, and you have to protect the society from them. And if you listen to the discourse, it's always coming back, and always it's always this pure, like you said, this colonial history. It's still there. It's not being talked about why we have this injustices of prosperity or non-prosperity. Nobody is talking about the reason why people might want to lose their homes and do this travel. So everybody's talking about insecurity and control. We have this now actually very hard, very intense, and changing the causes. And like then we have this evolution of asylum law, which now gets to a point, and it's not going to be then the stop of the discussions, because it's always about racism. It's instrumentalizing people, it's instrumentalizing refugees, it's instrumentalizing the fear and creating fear and fear about these discussions, and lying. I mean, we see now all the politicians are lying.
Could you say that?
Yeah, I mean, creating myths and creating fear. The fear is being created to be afraid of the people. And that's, later on we can get in details of the laws which are being split.
Yeah, I don't want to continue with this. It's here, it's not the bad people who's coming here, they say in the African, and you can get rent for when you are looking flat, when you are African. And in the camps when you go, another people they are going earlier, like when you are Arab, but the African woman who have, like, who's pregnant, who has her child is so small, they stay so long. And I don't know why. Like, sorry to say, but the reality, when the Ukrainian come, everyone say welcome, who have fled, who have room, but you don't see another people, some people saying, well, yeah, it's some, they are really a lot of nice people, but the reality and how we are here now in Germany, everyone, they accept the Ukrainian. I'm not against Ukrainian because I know what happened to them. Me too, that happened to me 30 years before I born. But I don't feel the welcome how they feel the Ukrainian welcome. Okay, was time for Syrian, but Iranian, no. They're saying Iranian, they're safe. Okay, someone who's safe. Why he come, the sea, with plastic boat to come here to put his life at risk. And when he come here, you don't accept like refugee too. I see Iranian. Iran is good. When it's good, why he come the person here? I don't come here. I'm looking something what I eat. I was looking safe place, but I don't feel that welcome. I'm not safe. What's safe? When I was in Mecklenburg-Vorpommern, I was living 1 year, 2 months. The police, they are coming all the time. I was 1 year, 1 month, I don't sleep. And I buy 26,000 to come here. They give us like office, what it's like. You eat breakfast, they make tick. Sometimes they are giving us expired food, but we are not allowed to speak. We make demonstration inside the camp. There was like, yeah, it's like this. We don't have too much money. No, we don't understand you. That's how the refugee life here. And our country, they go the time they want. They make us problems. Who's making, we are colonizing America, France, England, all of them. They go the time they want. They sleep the nice hotel was there. But me, I'm like refugee there. That's why I come here. But I don't feel that welcome. And it's a lot of women and a lot of people. It's not only black people. A lot of people. You can go Rajsted. It's not far away. It's only 1 hour there to go. You can see it's small kids who's with slippers. look, when you go Bahnhof or somewhere, who's cleaning is refugee. But the good job is the German people. Why? Why you don't think? I say sometimes the people here, they don't have heart. That's how I feel. Because when you have good heart, you say welcome. Because we are guests. We don't stay too long here. We will go back one day. I don't like to stay here so long too.
True.
Home is in the mouth of the shark.
True.
I'm speechless.
Yeah, it's powerful. Yeah, it's good.
Yes, let's continue. Go a little bit further, and we can just like always come back and go to the subjects that we have. So
just to buttress what she said and what you said, there's an angle that I've been trying to raise awareness to for many, many years that my European friends don't really look at it. You take an example, there's an hatred boiling up between two camps now, the marginalized, the migrant, and also the oppressor, which is the other side. And then this hatred is so profound now, social media is also helping spreading a certain kind of awareness, whether it's true or not, but you take the example of what's happening to France in Niger and those Francophone countries. Why is it that the entire populace hates France? So then I was breaking it down for a friend of mine that, listen, there's a lot of things to unpack here. If you look at, take for example, they deport, one person travels from Burkina Faso, from his village, goes on the perilous journey, cross the Sahara Desert, Mediterranean, arrives in Europe. He becomes an illegal immigrant, starts earning money on the black job scene market, and then sends money back home. That money he's sending back home, of course, it's taxed because he pays Western Union a commission. So we don't want to talk about that now. And then he sends that money back home. They build a community school. That little money helps to run the village. I've seen an entire town in Burkina Faso that runs on migrant farm workers who are working in Italy, and they send money back home. And all of a sudden, that guy is picked up one day, put on a plane, taken to a deportation camp, put on a plane and sent back to Africa, Burkina Faso. How do you think the people that rely on him will feel? How do you think he would feel? Because some of my European friends say they don't understand why they hate the white people so much. Then I tell them there's a lot of dimensions to that hatred that is boiling up. So that's one dimension I've given to you now. This guy has been deported back. He was treated bad when he was here anyway, and then he's been pushed back. And then he tells the story to an entire village. And that village, of course, will see the pain, and the hatred boils from there. And then you all like to go on holidays to tropical, exotic places. And then where you're going to, you've built up centuries or decades of hatred. And that becomes a threat to you also. So that's why I always challenge you guys that you are the ones who will effect the change in your society if you put the right people in government. In 2015, during the refugee influx, we all activists, all of us, we were challenging the system. Chancellor Merkel was the chancellor then. And then, yeah, the people from Africa, this, we met somewhere in Africa. And she said, yeah, we will build roads. I'm like, build roads? What roads? Where are those roads today? Fast forward 10 years later. Those roads, those millions they say they put there, we don't see it on the ground. It goes to their NGOs that they use for all sorts of things. So that is why the change must start here. This change must start in every locality, every community, every society. You must galvanize to put the right people in government. And when you put them there, you don't sit back, relax. You challenge them. When you do that, you can come and teach me to go and deal with those motherfuckers in my own country. But not from your own perspective, you tell me to go and deal with them in my own country. I wouldn't do that. because they work hand in hand. They are agents of the big powers, the big money. So that's just my take on that one.
Do you have politicians in Germany who give a different narrative?
Oh,
we don't really have that in the UK.
Do you
have them?
Let's throw the question.
But this is a very interesting question.
So let's throw it to the Germans.
I mean, that's the problem in Germany. We don't have a critical. For me, I don't hear them any political voice from politicians who would have a counter voice against what's happening right now. I can tell you, on Sunday night, we all know there is always Tatort. And people keep sitting, and then afterwards there's a discussion round on the Ville, and it's supposed to be a little critic. But I watched it last Sunday to be prepared for today a little bit. And there was the Ministry of the Interior, the super liar phaser, and then there was the super... She's, for me, is like, it's right wing. It's a socialist party in power right now. And then we had a video, Söder. He's from Bavaria. He's leading the Christian Social Union, no? And it was like Söder was talking about the concept of having a limit of asylum seekers, no? We don't have lots of asylum seekers anymore in Germany because it has been made impossible already because of lots of movement, right-wing movement in the 90s. In 93, they cut already the possibility to ask for asylum for lots of the people who don't come with a plane right to Germany. Well, and he said he was talking about this, just 200,000. And it was, they presented the phaser who had just signed, and today they finalized the most crucial law, European laws, which are going to be discussed now in the European Parliament, to with a fictive, not the, that people who come to the borders and cross the borders, they are being called not being crossing the border. It's a fictive not crossing the border, so the people can't plead for asylum anymore. And the people there's just have to be one place where they can ask for asylum. And so far it's been like you go to any institution, you say, I want asylum, police or whatever, then you can enter in an asylum system. Well, what we talked about, the GEAS, the communal European asylum system. Well, and she had just signed it. Like she sold all the last human rights we had, no? And she was presented as if, and he talked like, yeah, we have to have this just this limit of 200,000. And she was being presented as if she was the good one. Ah, no, that's really not okay. That's not okay. And I was like, what the hell are you talking about? And then they are talking, we have an extreme position and we have a, and she was presented as the left position, no? And she's right wing. And then they had a person who's giving advice to the governments how to do the treaties in between the countries like Tunisia or Turkey, which are super safe. People are being sent to Syria from Turkey and being sent to the desert in Tunisia. We know this. And it's really like creating a picture as if there was nobody. And we lawyers, we have like always too late. Also, like the civil action is always too late. All these plans have been made in 2016 and 2020. They have been planned already. And in 2021, they started now this crisis directory. And now all of a sudden, it comes today, they decided in the ministry conference, but we are too late. And what you talked about, it's like, and you also said, it's a continuous process, and we have to be there all the time. We can't just wait until there's a new thing, a new law, a new directive, a new decision, which makes us like run after. And we, what we need is, we need like a lobby, our lobby, an anti-racist lobby. And I'm really, really thankful for being creating this space today, because there is little space. And we were talking yesterday night, we were discussing with lawyers, we said, we don't have the capacities. One of my colleagues said, well, it's good that you go there, because every time we just have one case, we sit hours and hours for one person, and the entire system is making it more difficult. I mean, in 2022, they shortened the rights in the asylum procedure in Germany. And then they make it like you talked about the situation people have here. It's all made to make people being involved in, and lawyers being involved in little administrative stuff. So we need to address the real problem. This is real, no? But which is the basis of it, which is racism, and which is colonialism, and which is like this picture. And all these situations,
but it's quite related, actually, to what I wanted to ask, because, I mean, we are experiencing this tightening of asylum laws and the whole discussions, I mean, just like in the last years. I mean, I arrived in Germany in 2011, and as a refugee, and back then it was very different. I mean, it was a time that it was just like, okay, come, let's see. It was terrible, I have to say, but it was not that terrible as what I'm seeing right now. I mean, just like, people still could come. People still could just like stay. People still could just stay. But you know, I see just like after 2015, they started to build a kind of a new systematical way of tightening the way. It's just like, I have this feeling that it was just like a map or a road to saying, okay, we are right now 2015, it's not going to stop, we have to be there at 2030, for example. That's what I feel, kind of. And my question is, how do you actually experience that in your activities, in your work? I mean, Larry, in your journalistic work or in your work as in this radio network, you, as someone who's worked in university, and you as an advocate, you as an activist, how did you actually experience it?
Yeah, my English is not 100%, but I try to be bad. Yeah, you can see people who's living in container 12 years, not now. Here you can see people who's living calm, what they are not getting money, like 1 year, 8 months, 7 months, who have small kids. At like for Nina, when we start here to go in Rallstedt, Nina is not there for Nina Women in Action. 2020 was when Corona was really too much. Was they put together 200 people one place like this, kids, women who come from the hospital to directly that place. Imagine 2 months there was quarantine there. Until we go there, we start shouting. The people show us the food they are giving them. The kids who born this hospital 3 days come back there was 2 months and 3 days. And there was, look, they want to kill us another way. Here, a lot of people who's killing themselves, like hosts. I saw 3 persons who killed themselves. Only they want to deport where they come from. But they was like, no, you can't have fast to go back your country where you come. You must wait. Only they are asking to go back where they come. And what make me crazy, anyone of you saw who is quarantined 2 months to put like this space together, women and men and women, all of them. The winter, how it's really cold. It's not about we are telling you are all bad people. A lot of people, they have good heart. But here, the reality, a lot of people who saying we are this, we are anti-racist, we are this, they are racist. Because you can't accept container 12 years, people who live there. You must say this, no. and now they build another one to put the people, container, a tent, and the winter is coming. Our group, the women, they are coming really every time when they come, they're crying. It's not something what I hear someone, I see my eyes, only to get fled. They have paper. Like me, I have two kids. The smaller one, she's 1 year, 6 months. I applied asylum because the often tell what I have all the time. Huh? Your nationality is Somalia? I'm refugee. What do you want? What I'm a human being. Accept me like I'm a human. I come here. I'm looking safe place. I'm a woman who have small kids. Until now, I don't get every time paper is coming. For the job center people too. When we are black people, Arab who doesn't know the language, that I never get enough money from the job center. Every time something happened to me, and I'm going the people where the people help, like Infolad. I live in Felmsbrook. All the time, I'm like farmers there to go every week because I never was time. 7 months, I don't get money. The reason, we need this, we need this. I send, no, you don't need. Like I'm lying. Why I lie? The email is here. Look, they don't accept. They don't listen. Will be better. You listen and to think this is a human being. Don't look at me. I'm Muslim woman. I have hijab. No, I'm a human. Who's guest? Who will go back tomorrow? Who want reality? Come with us, Raleigh State, and see there what's happened. That time you will see your eyes. It's not what I'm only telling you. It's really hard. I don't know how can I explain. They don't give money to people. The person, how much he take? 135 euro. They say, okay, you will get, was last time, April, the woman, they told her, you will get September, who have small kids. I saw a woman who have cancer. She's getting chemo, who live there with another people. Imagine. Toilet who's sharing. Chemo, who now, who get it to, the person, what you will know when you see someone who get chemo, but she was there. Why you accept all that? Okay, you don't want the people say, hey, we don't want any refugee, don't come our country, stop. Now they were saying, you're like what you say, they build it big, come what's outside the border and people must stay there and to apply themselves there. It will be better you close and say, no, we don't need anyone. And you live for us, our country, and we don't come here, and we will go back. That's all. Sorry, it's not you, but that's what's happened here. We are there, they give us macaroni, what is inside water, when we say, what's this? This is the food what we cook. You want to eat, and you don't. We will put this, what they are saying, bio. That happened to me. It's not I saw somewhere. I was in Mecklenburg. Until when I get paper, I was looking flat. It's hard to get it. There was people who spitting me in the street because I'm black. I was scared my daughter. She's really small. Here's chocolate. No, she's brown. No, chocolate, brown. What's this? You have black dog in your home. You accept. You too, you're not white. What's black and white? Black is this. My color is not this.
Okay. For me, the question will be, all these laws, has it stopped the migrants from coming? Could anybody answer me in the audience? All these rules, laws, blah, 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 give money, pay millions of euros to government in Tunisia, in Turkey, has it stopped the migrants from coming? I can hear you. No. So that means it's bad investment. They're wasting your money on something that is not working. Just a couple of months ago, Italy, Europe went to Tunisia to stop the inflow. Millions of euros. Promised, memorandum of understanding, signed. 7,000, 10,000 people still came in. But then, out of this pool of people coming in, there are people dying also in the Mediterranean. Large numbers of people. But those people don't count. It doesn't make mainstream media news anymore. What makes mainstream news is those who succeed and survive the crossing. That's those they use as an example. So for me, if these policies are not working, why put money there? Why put taxpayers' money there? Why don't you divert the money into sensible options? When the influx came in 2015 from the Syrian flows, the politicians were lost. They didn't know what to do. They didn't even have a framework to work with. They had to call civil society to come and back them up. Oh, Camp Nagel, oh, Emily Dauflad, oh, this one, that one, please, what can you do? We know you are doing something with migrants and refugees. And then when the civil society now rescued them through solidarity, opening their houses and spaces for people to come in, these politicians all of a sudden changed 360 degrees again within 3 years and said, yeah, they will come, they will learn the language, they will be okay. Those who are not coming from Africa, we will send them back, blah, 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 blah. We are still there till today. Nothing has changed.
Yeah, I think that when I got into doing research in this space like 18 years ago, I imagined that if you produced evidence and research, like, oh no, everything you're saying is wrong. In fact, here's all the research, that might have some effect. And I've come to understand over the time that research is completely, the evidence is completely irrelevant. So we know from all the research all over the world that borders don't stop people moving, they just divert people into more dangerous journeys, you create illegal immigrants who then take dangerous journeys, and then you do more bordering and then they take more dangerous journeys, so you create a business model for smugglers, etc. So we know all of these things, but I've come to think that what we need is a culture change, is a political change, like a completely different way of talking about these issues in the public sphere, kind of making myself redundant, really. But I think there are kind of moments, like, so the first plane that was meant to take the first people to Rwanda, because in the UK we're now sending people to Rwanda, it was delayed for 8 hours by people lying in the road. And that gave time to have a legal process that managed to get an injunction for enough of them on legal grounds that you couldn't possibly deport these people for different reasons, that the plane was stopped. And now there's legal challenges going through. And there have been many cases of deportations where a whole community of people have, like, sat under a bus to prevent the deportation from happening. But perhaps, I don't know whether it's similar to your welcome moment. There are people, and they are, you know, where there's power, there's resistance, but it is not large enough to be a culture change, a political movement in a meaningful way.
Maybe there is not even a necessity of culture change, because there's a lot of people who are not
I think the judicial system in Germany and in the UK is quite different. Mm-hmm. The common law and the other one. So I've also challenged lawyers. I gave a speech at the law symposium some years ago. In Germany, I don't see human rights lawyers who challenge and take government to court. I don't see that here. We challenge government and take government to court. You can sue the government and take them to court in other spheres. But in Germany, I don't see that. And I tried to ask a flatmate of mine who was also studying law. So he was the one that kind of explained it to me that, nah, that's kind of in Britain or in America. The system here is a little bit different. So then I got to understand why it is as it is. But then, explain to me.
But we could, for example, right now we have this discussion about Merz, the chief of the Christian party, mm-hmm. he was just lying so wildly with his, I don't know, I would repeat also for you because you're not from, you're not here. He said like, okay, we can't sell this politics anymore. And refugees get their teeth made while Germans are waiting for appointments at the dentist. And it's like the best example. There is not a good organization of medical care for the entire German region because there is no medical care. It's not enough because the securities are not paying good. Well, so, and then he's just lying, and it's really obvious. And now we could really think that a person who is in a refugee in an asylum procedure could ask a lawyer to sue him. And I'm really waiting for, this just comes up like you said it. We could, if a person, it's like an in
fame. That's not what I meant. I meant groups of lawyers like yourself, groups of you, see that there's a violation of the German law, and then you sue the government to court based on that violation.
Yeah, but
that's what happened with the Supreme Court and the High Court in England against the...
Well, they're saying that it violates human rights law. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so the response of the government is, that's exactly why we've got to get rid of human rights.
You see?
So
that I mean, means... there's also another side in this. I mean, we talked about also the culture. Mm-hmm. And the problem is that, I mean, not just in Germany. In Germany, we are seeing an uprising right movement coming, I hope not, into the power. But I have this feeling maybe the next election or just like in 8 years, we have the same maybe case as France. That's just going to be just like France. Front National or Macron, and we're going to have also something like AFD or Merz, I don't know, or just like something like that. I mean, I personally am not that hopeful. I don't know what's going to happen here.
Yeah, it's just like kind of.
But on the other side, I have this feeling that someone like Friedrich Merz, he knows quite exactly what is he saying and to whom is he talking to.
Of
course, he has his audience. Yeah, just like almost the 30% of AfD voters other people who are just like saying yes, it is as it is, and it's totally equal if it's right or not, if it's a lie or not. On the other side, you're seeing just like that this dehumanization of body and soul of migrant. I mean, hundreds of thousands of migrant, I would say, got murdered in Mediterranean Sea. I mean, from my understanding, they got murdered. They could be saved. They could be rescued. They got murdered from European institutions. So we don't see any civil movements towards that. I mean, just like nobody, it's just like nothing is moving here. I mean, there's just like mass murder. And we are talking about a mass European product.
Even the ones with the murder. Evidence. In Greece, the Coast Guard rammed a boat that killed migrants. Nothing, we've not heard anything going to.
No, Nigeria. Nothing. I mean,
the French boat did the same in the Mediterranean. We don't see nothing happening.
Yeah, my question is to the panel, I mean, what is going to be, I mean, how can we just like kind of evoke the solidarity or evoke this cultural, how do you say it, this cultural corruption in Western society?
The society needs to find a way to push them back, these politicians. We need to find a model that puts them on the back foot so that they know that if they mess up again, this is what can happen. And that's where I'm looking for the legal option. Because every time going on the street protesting, it's good, but it doesn't really solve the problem. But if there's a protest and there's a legal struggle at the same time, this is what happened during the civil rights struggle in America. The people on the streets, and then they were ready for the courts. Okay? So for me, I've been preaching for years in Germany or Europe that please, as people are protesting on the streets, we also need to look for a legal protest also, whereby lawyers, human rights lawyers, and constitutional lawyers will take the government to court based on violations of fundamental principles that is enshrined in the constitutions of these European countries. I don't see that. In 15 years, I've not seen it. So that needs to change. If not, all this protest we are doing on the streets or on podcasts is merely to our audience. It doesn't have much impact. That's why I want a judicial option to put them on the back footing.
But you know that you're going to a judicial system to which, I mean, just like, let's say that you bring a white super bourgeois government to a super bourgeois.
No problem. We are on the streets because people are on the streets also, inter alia, at the same time.
Yeah.
They become afraid. I know politicians, they don't want mess. That's why they manipulate the citizenry every time.
What is your reaction, actually?
I'm really not the right lawyer to be talked to right now because I don't know.
It's new, huh?
Changing laws.
Not changing laws.
I know. No, they are changing laws against public law principles.
Yeah.
For example, in 2015, there was the introduction of a residence
act.
No, that people who recognized refugees have to stay in the province where they have been recognized for the next 3 years of integration reasons. That's how it's written. If you don't have a job, you can't move. You have to stay, be living there. It's not being in the process, but it's a person who has been recognized as a refugee with a residence permit, with a work permit, and you can't move to another province if you don't have a job there, for example. And this is totally against public law, against the Geneva Convention, and we tried, we did lots of suits and cases and whatever, and it doesn't change, but I wouldn't know how to sue the politicians for making these laws.
Have you tried taking them to the European Court?
The European Court, I have brought several cases to the European Court, but you have to decide, there's this European Court of Human Rights, mm-hmm. or the European Court in Strasbourg. Mm-hmm. And the Human Rights, you can just bring your own cases, and the other one, the judge himself or herself has to plant the case, so you don't have an influence in it. But you can't sue. I can't see a legal way to sue a politician for creating an unconstitutional law.
Yeah, the suing is just a tool to make him uncomfortable. You know you're not going to win the case anyway, but it's just to make him be on the back foot that this can happen to him. Because I saw there's an Italian test case of a hippie who took the Italian government to Strasbourg. When he was advocating, everybody thought he was a hippie, he's crazy. But then the case got to Strasbourg, and that brought the government to the awareness that, in Strasbourg, why? So that's the kind of approach I'm looking for, something to put them on the back foot, even if you know you're not going to win.
I think your question is really important, and I think it goes back to the beginning. Like, how can you end up with a situation where thousands, maybe millions of people are dying, and where you have pushbacks to Libya, people being tortured in detention centres funded by the EU, like just gross, where you have the UN, the European Council of Refugees and Exiles, all sorts of major organisations saying human rights violations are happening and they have to be stopped. How can you have that situation occurring and it not be really part of the political discourse at all? And it's about a way of thinking about the world, about the people in the world, about people whose lives are worthy, worth saving. Sometimes I say to my students, what if 10,000 Germans were dying in the Mediterranean?
Yeah,
don't you think people would be panicking? It's kind of, how is that problem imagine and understood? And I think the general kind of space is the public kind of discussion is filled with two sorts of discourses about it. One is that it needs to be solved in a kind of really dehumanizing, racist way where we like are just deporting people somewhere, anywhere, elsewhere. They can drown if they want to come here, just really nasty, like kind of punish people into not coming. And the other, which the left-wing kind of governments tend to go for, is like a technocratic fantasy, like that there's a technical fix. And if we just have a more efficient system, or we have transit processing zones and kind of shiny words like that, then we will solve the problem. And it's solvable. And both of those imagine it's solvable either by kind of gratuitous punishment or by technical fixes. But none of it imagines a world in which people move, like you said.
These technocrats also came in 2015, after the 2015 influx, and claimed that, they need to put boots on the ground to stop the migrants. So that's why boots on the ground were created in Niger. But in real sense, the boots on the ground in Niger were to protect the minefields for uranium and other mineral resources. It's not to stop the migrants, because these migrants are still coming in. So that means sending soldiers to other people's countries to occupy them doesn't also look good in 21st century, in this time, you know? So these technocrats also don't have solutions.
No, and I think that probably gets at the fact that there is value to be gained. Like, we're naive if we don't think people are really benefiting from this situation. There's political value to be gained from the crisis, and there's massive economic value to be gained from running detention centres, deportation. I mean, I think that the projects in Africa, the whole journey approach, I think the EU spent about $1 billion on it. Frontex is like a humongous operation. The UK government spent like £500,000 on dogs in Calais last year. I mean, it's just the volumes of money, and they're all going to multinational corporations that pop up in every country that you go to. So it's not like nobody benefits, right? Like, people benefit from this entire thing. And then we're kind of distracted down here shouting at each other.
Well, giving up everything to protect the garden.
Yes, that's it. And the people who are in the garden are having the benefit of not feeling, I don't know, I mean, it's so contradictory, because at the end they don't have the benefit, because they have been taught this fear, and this fear is being constructed by all this discourse of dehumanizing and two class of people, the people who have rights and the ones who have had human rights, and the civil ones who have civil rights, and the ones who are in and the ones who are out. And by these laws which the technocrats make, like you describe, the situations is a construction. I mean, people are saying we have to have more control, but it's the control which we have in Germany, for example, which create all this chaos. We have the prohibition to move. You have the obligation to live in centers here in Germany. And this money thing, I have lots of clients who want to move out, who have an offer of a flat, which costs €600 for a woman and two kids. And then they have to stay in the public housing, and there it's going to be paid €2,000, and it's being paid to the commune. It's like also this lies of people wanting, people talking about objectifying people. And I think that's one thing, and it's a creation, and the ones who benefit are the subjects in this, the white subjects in the garden Europe, to keep on being the subjects and creating the objects who are being managed, whatever. And like you said, it's not going to stop migration.
But when they want, they will do it. Because like now when the Ukrainian come, there was like, they can work without language, they can have flat without anything, like 3 months. But we who stay like 7-6 years, we are not allowed to do it. I was in Mecklenburg-Vorpommern, and I want to move here. I have paper, but they was like, you don't speak German. No, you have hijab. And what's the problem for my hijab? Okay, why now the Ukraine? I'm not against anyone, but why Ukrainian now they can walk without language, but me not? And there, yes. I'm not a human being. And what's the freedom? I like to know what's freedom. I will tell you, my family, they push me to have hijab, and I remove now that to tell you that propaganda. I like to know what's the freedom. We don't have freedom here.
I would we asked the panel members for actually a song, each of them, what they're going to wish in related to their activities and what they're going to work on. I'm starting with Sadia's wish song, Hijabi, and it would be great if you could play the song. Thank you.
What the hair look like? Bet the hair look nice. Don't that make you sweat? Don't that feel too tight? Yo, what your hair look like? Bet your hair look nice. How long your hair is? You need to get your life. You only see Oriental. You steady working that dental. You popping off at the lip and run your mouth like a treadmill. Not your exotic vacation. I'm bored with your fascination. I need that PayPal, PayPal, PayPal if you want education. All around the world, love women every shade of. Me and my hijabi ladies, we was born in the 80s. So pretty like the Euphrates and party like some Kuwaitis. Deeper than some diplomas, current like some hot yoga. Taking back the misnomers and teleporting through trauma. Teleporting through trauma, teleporting through trauma. I've been stacking my karma, Nefertiti no drama. Make a feminist planet, woman haters get banished. Covered up or not, don't ever take us for granted. All around the world, love women every shade of. Even if you hate it, I still rap my hijab, rap my hijab, rap my hijab, rap my hijab. Keep swagging my hijab, swagging my hijab, swagging my hijab, swagging, swagging my hijab. I still rap my hijab, rap my hijab, rap my hijab, rap, rap my hijab. Keep swagging my hijab, swagging my hijab, swagging my hijab, swagging, swagging. You're just jealous of my sisters, these misters, these hippies, these prissies, these Sufis, these Reddies, these Sunnis, these Shiites, Yemenis, Somalis, Lebanese, Pakistanis, these Sudis, Sudanis, Iraqis, Punjabis, Afghanis, Yazidis, Khadijis, Indonesians, Egyptians, Canadians, Algerians, Nigerians, Americans, Libyans, Tunisians, Palestinians, hidden beyond the Mekong and Laos, Senegalese and Burkina Faso.
So, now we're back from this short break and the beautiful song which Sadia wished. I'm going to ask Ilke about the project that she's running, actually, because at the beginning of the talk you said that we're going to go deeper towards that and you're going to talk about that a little bit more. So, now it's the time.
Thank you.
We're all ears.
Thank you. Yeah. Well, as I said, I've been working with queer refugee seekers for more than 20 years now, and the problem always is that people live in a community with people here. We have quite well organized communities. We have medical attention. We have endocrinologists. We have a quite nice queer community in Hamburg. And people come here and ask for asylum are now always being transferred to another country, because we have in Germany, to explain shortly, the system: you apply for asylum and then you are transferred to a province which is then responsible for your country. Because back in the days, it was like they said the ministry, the Bundesamt.
The refugee office
for refugee recognition. They have like dependances in all kind of provinces, and they are specialized for certain countries. And so you are being sent to this province where the refugee office has the country specialized, because they say, okay, they have the information about the country, the political backgrounds, and so they can check if a person is telling the truth or not, whatever. And because of the system, and the system of that all the provinces take the same amount of refugees, or have, like, money-wise, like they say, it's more just that, not just in the centers where people want to be, all refugees are. So they are being transferred. And like in the case, everybody's being transferred, so the procedure takes, and like queer people usually have, often have a life of different kind of persecution, as people who come from a certain moment of a war, of a conflict or whatever, the persecution often is all their lives, and it's a different, it's like we say psychologically, like a sequential traumatization. It's not re-traumatization, but sequential. It's always coming, this and then this and this and this is going to be added. And so we said it's necessary first that the people are not going to the same situation where they're coming from, going to the same people where they are coming from, because they are fleeing from the society, if there is criminalized, or if it's not criminalized, but the persecution comes from the civil society. So we say it to respect the rights of protection for queer people, to really protect it. We asked the Senate to have a house, territory, whatever, where queer refugees are safe from the first moment on. It's like in Hamburg, the Senate has recognized that queer people also have a certain special need for protection, like, and that's why we are called Article 21. It's Article 21 from a European directive which is describing how the asylum process has to be. And in Article 21, there are mentioned persons with special needs of vulnerability, like minors or persons who have suffered from reiterated sexual violence. And queer refugees are being recognized and all over Germany, also in Hamburg especially, as especially vulnerable. But the system in Hamburg is, first of all, the people are being sent away to the other provinces, and then we have the system that all refugees are being together in one camp or one building or whatever with everybody else. And until you can leave the first camp, it takes months, and sometimes never. And in Hamburg, we have a system, like queer people can get into certain rooms within the camp, Or they can also get to private places. We have a, an organization. They organize that they can get into private housing, but always after having been months in the regular housing. So we say this is the first moments are the most important moments. We say the people have to be protected not only from their people or their fears, but also from security, which is usually not very queer friendly. And so, well, we created this project, and we need lots of, what do you call it?
Support
from civil society to make our claim more strong. So we have this QR code, we have an Instagram, and we have a campaign, like a petition, and we have a paper of position, which you can read in our Instagram, and you can spread it and talk to any politicians or whatever. We talked already to, we send already our position paper to the Ministry of the Interior, and he responded, everything is fine in Hamburg. We said, okay. And the Ministry of the Social, she didn't even reply. And we created an exhibition with videos, people who have passed through the asylum system, being queer, asking, talking about what they want, what they have lived, and what could be a possibility to make the system better, also criticizing detailed system, whatever. It's really interesting interviews. So we have had some expositions already. If anybody's here and has a nice space to do the exposition to create more publicity, you can ask me. And maybe we're going to do it here. Maybe there's going to be something going on. Yeah, that's the
question. Thank you, Yuka. When we talk all about all of the circumstances and about how actually the European countries, European Union, and the whole, I mean, Western powers are tightening actually the ways of migration and criminalizing actually the migrants from the beginning. But now it's just like we have this feeling that we are entering a new era of suppression, kind of, or just this kind of just like border regimes, suppression from border regimes. In this, under these circumstances, how could we think about solidarity, and how can we continue to organize within existing structure? Or maybe is there an urgent need for thinking about creating new structures? Lucy and Larry, Sadia, Ilke.
Yeah, I think it's really difficult, because I guess this is the hopeful bit, isn't it, of the panel?
Sure.
Something hopeful at the end, you said. And every time I do anything at the moment, we just talk about how awful everything is, and then it's like, have you got something hopeful at the end? But I think it's important to do what you can from the position you occupy. So, because it is kind of so overwhelming, isn't it, to think of defeating all of this stuff. So, like, I try and do things, get into spaces that I can get into because of who I am. Talk to politicians, go on centrist or right-wing podcasts, or write letters to newspapers, I don't know, do all sorts of things that I can do from my position in the university, talk to students widely, different students studying different kinds of things. But I think it's difficult, isn't it, to find the belief that you've got to continue on as though you will win, you will. But I think we do need, I think we can't be totally trapped in constantly critiquing what's happening, because it's not getting it as anywhere. Like, the critique is built into the system. We'll announce this thing and there'll be all these left-wing people going, meh, meh, meh. And that's like built in. Our critique is there'll be kind of all of these things that we'll do. And they're like, oh, and some people will do that, but then we'll carry on and lots of people will think it's brilliant. So then it's like I've started to think maybe just need to spend a lot more time and effort on imagining different futures and talking in completely different ways and talking about what would an asylum system that put dignity at the center look like, and just talk as though it's possible, because I have spent so much time criticizing. I feel like it'd be better to start building, just talking as though something else is possible.
A lot of people saying we are solidarity about this, we are solidarity about this, but they are not. First, we must start ourselves to feel like why those people, they are here, how we help each other, to talk to people like personalities, because a lot of people, they don't know what solidarity. Solidarity is not about her. I have friend from Syria. I help him one night to sleep here. I give flat here. Not the solidarity. We must be together. How can we fight all these politicians to do something nice? Solidarity is not about we come here, you write, like you interview with me and to say, ha, how you come here? I give you like 3 hours to talk and later, ha, I interview that person and she come here so hard, comes here so hard. Not, we want to work together, like hard work here. When you want to fight, it's not fight, you beat someone, but we need good communication together, how we see another people who's like down for us. It's not we sit here and today, how we did that event and it's finished. We must speak about the people who study, the young people who study. It's a lot of people, really nice people here in Hamburg. But what about like Mecklenburg-Vorpommern? There, forget them. The people who live in the bush. But here a lot of young people who like to really help, but they are who help them. Like sometimes you see some who saying we are solidarity, we are against this, but they are writing German only, the flyer what they have. How can I understand when I don't know to this language? They are going like horse and they are writing German. How you are solidarity? Only you are only showing the people you go there, like I'm showing, I give you water today, but what about tomorrow? We need to be together and to speak the reality. Here, what I feel like, the people, they don't like the reality. Listen, like, yesterday that happened. They don't like conflict. Like, to speak together, you did wrong. You can come to me to say, Miss Sadia, you did this wrong yesterday. Maybe I can change. Please, we work together and to stop all these shit things what's happening here. Imagine someone who took police and they say, he killed himself, he burned himself, where he bring the fire inside the jail. What we know when the police take you jail, they look everywhere, and they say he burned himself. Where he bring the fires, anyone of you ask, where this person, how he killed himself inside the jail? They killed them and they're saying no, but we accept. We are going demonstration one day. It's finished. We need really big fight. We don't need like only talk.
We are kind of under, not say time pressure, but I would say because we need also take some questions from the audience, so... Sure take.
Just one last statement. I think we need to reorganize. We don't need to create something new. We just need to recycle what we've already started. We need to go back to the drawing board, re-energize the base, the struggles, re-ginger the struggles, and come out in full force to effect change in our society. That's all.
If you want to say something, or we could just like go to take questions from audience, if you like. Whatever. Yeah, okay, so first, thank to the panel for this talk. And I personally am very touched, I have to say. And now we take questions from the audience. Who's going to be the first one?
I have a question to what Larry suggested and your answer to it, which is taking legal action against governments. And I was a bit confused because we do have the Grundgesetz, and if we listen to Saida telling what's going on in the camps, if we read the news on what they want to bring up on the new laws, which are like highly scratching humanitarian laws, who are highly scratching the German Grundgesetz, there is a huge fundus of things that we can sue them. We can, and this is on like the last questions and of like recycling the structures that have been built up over the last years. Is we need a huge, in my opinion, and this is a question to you as well, is why it's not possible. Because we see now that from the climate protest, I just read an article today that worldwide in the last, I think only this year, 3,000 legal cases went on where like groups of lawyers, communities, they sued whole continents. They sued the European Union. We can do this. So we should do this, because I think I'm a little bit more pessimistic than Mo when he's talking about 4 years or 8 years of right-wing governments coming into place in Germany. I think what we're facing is that we have a lot of parties moving to the right wing. So we're having it now, and I think we need to start to do defense, and we need to stop acting now because we're already late. We all know what's going on in the news. We're reading the articles. We know which laws they're putting on the way now, and just let them eat their own poison. Like, we need to organize to sue them and do it like the, I don't know, there is this saying about the Ukrainian warfare about like the 1,000 bee stings. Let them like do the 1,000 bee stings with lawsuits. Because we have the right for it. This is what the Grundgesetz is for. It's our civil defense on when the state is doing something against law. And if we're not having that system anywhere of like Gewaltentrennung and everything, I think we have, you know, we have a very huge problem above that. So it's my question at the end, why isn't that possible? Next to that, of course, it's our job now to build up that networks of lawyers and to connect, to do that in a huge range. But isn't that a way to go? As Larry suggested, as it was, you know, obviously there was examples from Great Britain. Yeah, let's put it there.
I think you have to sue the government.
It seems like it. I'm in an association of lawyers. And we just talked about if we have the capacity to try to proceed the prohibition of the AfD. And we were talking also about this, the migration, this, let's say, asylum system cutting of rights. But no one of us, we are also part of, some of them are from the European the ECCR, they sue, they have the special cases like for example, they try to sue the Spanish government for the pushback in Melilla in 2014, which was a success in 2017. They gained, then the Spanish state went against it. And then in 2020, the Great Chamber of the European Court of Human Rights, they said it's legal, the pushbacks. And they based it on the lying of the Spanish state, which had said these refugees had the right, had the possibility to get to seek for asylum in a place, and they could have gone like 1.5 kilometers to a position of the Guardia Civil to make their claim there, which was not true. They couldn't have done so, and everybody knew it. They had expertise explaining to the court that it was not possible, and still they based their decision to legalize pushbacks in Melilla on the false facts the Spanish state had brought to court. So, first of all, to whom do we apply to sue the state? It's a court which, who is this? Then talking about prohibition of the AFD, it's just the government, the parliament, or the Bundesrat who have the right to do this to initiate this prohibition. And whom are we asking for? Who is these people? And if we talk, if we hear the daily talks, we need to do it in a different way. We need to create our discourses, and we have to put also the lights on what's positive, I think. I mean, there is lots of people who are wanting, who are against all this politics, and we are always just putting the lights, the spots on this, what's, who's voting for the FD or they're gaining. For example, when we have this Mittelstudie, the study of the media of society, where they found out that the radicalization to the right wing has become more and more intense the last 4 years, that more than, I don't know the percentage, but a huge percentage of Germans have a clear right-wing, anti-democratic opinion, and putting all the lights on it makes us feel as if there were so many right wings around us. There are lots of people who are solidary. There's lots of people. There have been questionnaires in 2018 that the people who have been active in 2015 and 16, they have triplified. There's still people who are wanting a different world, and we need to give more space to this kind of discourses. I think that's the important thing we have to do, and we have to get together to really reactivate and not being like stopping here. Like today the ministries decided, okay, all the asylum system is going to happen, it's going to come, and next year in February the European Parliament is going to decide that the borders are being closed, not closed, but for us, yeah. But we have to, we can't stop there, we have to keep on, and it's not, and like we can't sit back and say, okay, now we did this. We have to integrate this in our lives, and I don't, I think really, yeah, well, we have to go parallel ways, but suing this government, I still don't know. I will bring it back to the association, and I will talk to them.
Thank you very much. Any other question?
Thank you. So, I think it's a very difficult discussion. So, I do share the belief that the government is doing a lot wrong, but also a little bit like Ilka said, who is electing the government? We are talking about AfD, of course, and right wing, but also we also talked about that our whole government is turning right wing. So it's even beginning at the SPD. So it's actually the society which where we have to start. You know, we are electing them, and of course we could sue the politicians, but actually we are electing the politicians. So I would love to know, when we are hearing in the news about an upcoming housing crisis, actually that this year we should have built 400,000 buildings, but we are just building 200,000. This is what society believes, you know, where the society thinks, oh no, what about our resources? Although we are spending 100 billion on military. Like, how can we communicate to the society and make a culture of actually there is there are ways how we can be have solidarity.
Thank you. Anyone wants to react?
I could say something.
Sure.
I think the relationship between politics and public opinion is really important and complex. And I think that especially in this issue, it's like I was saying before, there's so much political value to be gained from distracting people. So most people in the UK, for example, will never meet someone who has crossed the channel. It will have no effect on their life. They'll never meet someone who's sought asylum. But after Brexit, for the first time in 20 or 30 years, immigration fell out of the top 10 issues that people were concerned about. Because every day before that, it was just in the news every day, asylum seekers and Polish people and all this. So it fell out also because immigration is solved now. And it, for several years, was not of any interest. And then when after the pandemic, when the pandemic was mismanaged, the economy is completely destroyed, like the country is in a state of ruination after 13 years of austerity, suddenly small boat channel crossings are the main challenge facing the country, and it's the only thing the politicians want to talk about. And it's back now, it's the second most important issue for voters, because they've been told that it's a massive problem, even though it's not an actual problem for them. So I think it's like whether the politicians are being led by what people think because they've been voted in, or whether they are involved in stoking fear and manipulating people's views, and then that cycle continues, I think. I don't know if everything's perfect in Germany, but I would imagine that there are things that politicians don't want to draw attention to, that it's much more convenient to blame the dental crisis on on refugees.
So we have to say one of the countries who has one of the best medical care systems, maybe in the whole world. This is just like, yeah.
Okay, so invented dental crisis.
Invented crisis, invented. Exactly.
Yeah. Mm. But yeah, I think it's our fault in a way. Why have we elected these
please
people?
Please don't get it twisted. I didn't say sue politicians. I say sue government policies. Because there's no point suing a politician. So don't let us get it mixed up. Sue government policies, not politician. If you sue a politician, you're going to lose in court. It's very simple. But you sue the policies that they try to implement. And those policies are what affects every one of us. So that's just to make some clarity about suing politicians. No, if you sue a politician, it becomes in law, I think there's no locus standing in Latin for that. So you could sue a government policy. Except a politician falls and become racist or say a racist law or something, then you could sue him personally for that. But then to blame one politician for the entire policies of government is, in my case, is ridiculous. So, but you can try to sue the policies that they try to implement.
Thank you. Any other question from the audience?
Hi. I moved to Germany just a few weeks ago, so excuse my ignorance, maybe on certain policies. So in Austria, for example, we have like close where I grew up, we have this refugee center that actually also used refugees as working force within the center and for the surrounding area. And I think in that example, what Lucy and Sadia also said about kind of like making things inaccessible and more expensive, I think there's also with like this example of like labor exploitation. I think we can't really forget that there's also a certain profit incentive of being cruel and inhumane towards refugees. And I don't know, maybe you have a comment towards also this?
Can you
repeat yeah, sorry.
The question? I like profiteering on the migration crisis. Huh?
Yes, so like in it's called Bürgelkopf. It's this refugee center in the Alps in Austria, and there, first of all, it's like really far out of the city, so like refugees are not seen, and it's really difficult for them to get into the city, and then there are like the refugees get paid like maybe €1 an hour or something for doing like hard physical labor in the forest and helping with ranger things. So basically like a certain amount of labor exploitation. And for the community, that's actually a profit because they get money from the state because they host refugees, but then they also exploit the refugees' labor.
For example, now in Rallstedt, it's the middle of the city, I think. It's a little bit far away, but in Hamburg that is better because the people can get bus and all, but the area, they accept to be their camp, but when the media, first the media, they are not telling the truth. They are not speaking what's happening in there, how the life people there. Only they are like refugee camp and they are living there, but why you accept women as small kids to put there and to close them door and with paper? I eat, for example, you eat breakfast, tick, lunch, tick, dinner, tick, the toilet. Like, for example, where I come in Mecklenburg-Vorpommern, we live in the bush where the bus is coming only 4 times a day. Imagine you buy a ticket, you give €5, he will give you 2 tickets, but you don't need it, only you are one person. And other people, they are watching. And when you say, I don't want, he will be like, no, you ask. I don't understand you, what you're speaking. Until he called for you, police. Why the people behind me, they accept that one, it's not only a government. The people too, they accept a lot of things. Because they are seeing what's happened. How someone called for me, police, when he take my money. And I can't say anything. The police will come, you're all face. Sometimes that, we don't say anything. We give the €5 and we go out. 6 kilometers, 10 kilometers far away from the city. And you don't know, some people live there. But everyone is seen. Sometimes people go there and they are seen, but nothing is changing. Until now is there. Maybe that comes 20-something years is there. I don't know how many years, but I come 2017. And it's in the bush. What you, in the inside the camp, you are not getting good food. You are not allowed to buy food outside. We are not allowed to come humble, like what you say. It's not long time. We are not allowed because we are, the office, what we have, is only there, that area. When we come out, the police will give it back there. We are not criminal, but only the office, what we have it. We accept, all of you, you accept this. We must bring the media, everything, what is happening inside the camps. It's not we say, oh, let's go demo, like what I say. Listen, my problem, and like zero. I'm 6 years, I'm fighting, but still this happened what I was experiencing when I come here. Until now they are happening, and nothing changed. We need change. We need to be together. That time maybe we can have big power, but me alone, I can't do anything without you. You too, without me, you can't do anything. We must be together. You don't listen only my problem. Everyone have problem. No one happy. But still you can see these people who come to your country, who pass in this sea and a lot of these problems. I don't come here to look money or something like that. As I told you, all of you, I buy 26,000 to come here with risk, with boat. I sleep in the street. I pass a lot of country. Only I was looking place where I can say I'm happy now, but I'm not happy. And I don't know where I go back. When my country is good, I will go back tomorrow. But
to answer your question, your concerns, actually, labor exploitation, I think the labor union has a rule against that. So the most effective tool is campaign against it through media, social media, civil society media. And then the product that is made from the labor exploitation should be boycotted. When you boycott buying those products, then it sends a message to the exploiter that it doesn't work. I think that's one of the most effective ways to counter that. I don't think European laws can... Yeah, they all have all these frameworks and blah, 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 but it still boils down to the local country, like Austria, like Germany, like Italy. So you have to just do your investigation very well, raise media awareness and campaign towards it, and then finally boycott the product. If there's no product being manufactured there, then create a mass movement of people to shut it down. That's it. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We are almost at the end, let's say. Time is calling, kind of. I want to just say something about that, what you say, exploitation of this already invisible body of the migrants. I mean, I have to think about it a lot because, I mean, I experienced it by myself. It's like 2011. I arrived in a city which calls Xanten. It's the only German or probably European city which starts with X. It's in West Germany, in the border of Netherlands, close to Holland, Netherlands border. And it's a very beautiful city. I mean, just like, it's amazing. There are a lot of tourists during summer who are coming from Netherlands with their bikes, and there's just like a Roman site. There is a Roman amphitheater. They're crazy. I mean, it was just the center of Roman imperialism in Germany or in West Europe, kind of. And I arrived there, and it was on the first day I went to this social amt, and they put just like some papers in front of me. I didn't understand shit. I mean, just like, what is this? I don't know. It was just like, yeah, sign it. And I was like, okay, do I have another option? I can't read it, but I have to sign it. So, and you are scared. I mean, there is, when you are in exile, when you are coming to this country as a migrant, especially as an adult, something happening to your personality, and it's just like something breaking in your personality. And you have to build it up again. And at the beginning, you are just like a scared, wounded animal who was just like coming to a shelter and thinks, oh, I need some help or whatever. I mean, and trying to keep your dignity, but you are just like doing everything to get to this safe place. And I just like signed. I was like, I don't know. 1 week later, just like, I'm in my room and this guy was coming and starting to talk with me in German, in broken English, and saying, you have to go to work. I mean, just like, what work? I was just like, €1 job. It was like that. Yeah. And they said just now, no, this is, there were other people who came to me, just like, there was a guy from Syria, there was a guy from Dagestan, Afghan family, and they were just like trying to tell me how is these things are working in this beautiful city of Xanten. And they were saying that, so you have to deliver 60 hours of €1 job per month so you can get around 240 euros of coupons. So with these coupons, you can, not even money, coupons, to go to Edeka, or I mean, just like there was also funny thing. There was just like Edeka is a very expensive supermarket. The only supermarket closed that is a refugee camp was Edeka. I mean, it's like impossible for us to buy something there. It's like 240 euros of coupons. And it was like, if you don't work for a month, this 60 hours, or if you work less than 60 hours, they're gonna cut it, like, not gonna give the whole 240 in at once, but they were just like, give you 120 at the beginning of the month and 120 at the 15th of the month. And if you don't work these 60 hours for 2 months, they're gonna cut the whole coupons. And I was like, I mean, isn't that just like a kind of it's a kind of expanding of German Arbeitslager. I mean, is it like it's as fascist as I could interpreting in that? I was like, it's fucking Arbeitslager. And what did they do? Nobody who went to the Arbeitslager, we know, I mean, people got criminalized, people got dehumanized because of what they were or what they got labeled as. So, and it happened and it's happening still. Yeah. And I would say it's a very fascist process. I'm sorry to ending this panel. Yeah.
Can I add something?
Yeah.
Because we had this conference on abolitionism here in June, and there was one workshop where this topic also came up of like labor exploitation, and where we tried to think about how different political movements and marginalized groups can also have a shared struggle. It's different for every group, but it comes back to the same root. And this labor exploitation, like at that time, I think... Some representatives of the prisoner Gewerkschaft, Gefangenengewerkschaft, they were suing, like leading a case against the ridiculous amount of money that prisoners are paid for their work that they do. And there was one disabled activist from the 80s who said, and exactly the same thing is also happening in disabled workshops where people get paid, I think, 1.69 euro per hour. And also companies are selling that as like a charity that they do, as like products that when you buy them, you are a good person, while there is an actually segregation from the first labor market, right? So I think also the question would be, how can different groups that are marginalized in a kind of post-fascist and capitalist German country that we live in, where there's a lot of these continuities of violence against racialized people, disabled people, and all kinds of people that have been given all kinds of labels. So, like, how can we also, like, join these fights?
Yeah, but where is DGB and Verdi in all this? Are they not the workers' union, labor union movement in Germany? So they are the ones to be at the forefront of this. So you complain, we as society complain to them, then they take it up on a bigger scale. Because they are the ones who have this kind of power, like a defender of labor rights. That's my own thinking. I don't know if I'm in La La Land, but...
That's the case in the UK.
Yeah.
Like what I want to add here, there are a lot of firma, this agency places who's giving job to people who have like paper, who doesn't have it. All of them, they get half of the money what you work, and they will give you half that money. Sometimes they practice you like 2 months, 3 days, something like this, and no one complain, no one speaking about this. Like Amazon, what she's doing, the people. Look, a lot of black people, a lot of migrants who's working there, hard work. And the end, they throw the people like trash, like 6 months, 8 months. Someone is coming, someone is going. Because the people, they don't have job, and that's why they're going. But no one's saying, why this old company, why we don't fight with them? Like this, all the camps, like what I say, in the camps, some camps, they are this, what's named, Malteser. Who's working, who's security, all of them. They are getting a lot of money, but when I'm looking flat, no. Ah, you are a big family, you are 4 people, you need 4 rooms. But when I live in the camp, to live 1 room is okay. But when I'm looking flat, I'm not allowed to have what I want. because we are many people. Why all this we are not seeing? Why we close our eyes? We need to open our eyes to look all these bad things, what's happened. Maybe tomorrow happened to you what happened to us. We must fight with them because really they are using the people like trash. Someone is coming 6 months ago, come and go, and half of your money they took it. We must start from there. We must start all companies, all these companies who's like chef and giving the bad food to the people. No milk for the kids. Why?
So, we're at the end of the panel. Thank you very much. I would at first thank Larry, thanks Lucy, thanks Sadia, thanks Ilka, thanks Kampnagel, Laro, Alina. I'm so sorry. I'm kind of just like, no. Yeah, thank you very much. At the end, we're going to listen to two songs, other wish songs from the panel members, Ilka's songs, Leah Shahin, Bunterfleck, and Lucy's song, Palante. Am I pronouncing it right? Hooray for the rough riff raff. Thank you very much, and have a nice evening.
Für viele beklemmende Kriege, Uneinigkeit zu groß auf der Wiege, Demokratie, Feindlichkeit, macht Wiege, Staaten jauchzen wie eine Ziege, Populismus auf dem Wege zu siegen, baue eine neue Alternative, weg von der kulturell geprägten Bibel, Mensch ist Mensch, zu simpel und penibel, nur ein paar geile kleinen Schnudel vor deine fetten Mercedes, dein Trauersiegel, Armut, Zeugnis, Hip-Hop, wo sind die Real? Wow, eine neue bunte Flecke, Hip-Hop, Lia Shahin, ich picke deinen Trap und ball eine fette Show, seh mich als die frische Schwester, so zerfick ich dich mit meinem Choralen Orchester im Flow. Lebe ich nun meinen Traumjob, Lia Shahin. Ich scheiß auf Schwanzrap und kutter die Frequenz so. Lass die Zeck die süße Schwester und vergiss bloß nicht mein chorales Orchester. Langsam wieder angekommen, Shutdown wurde angenommen. Mit Menschen sind mitgenommen, Gewicht leider zugenommen. Blutbahnen sind auch daran, statisch, basisch nicht vollkommen. Wechsel die Perspektive und merk, die Natur hat gewonnen. Mensch, was nun? Hau dir lyrisch in die Fresse, bunter Fleckresse, Finesse. Realistisch, dass du's nie vergesse, vermessen. Eine Blässe, denn besessene Abszesse sind Prozesse zu Anlässen, die Veränderung stressen. Infolgedessen wird Intoleranz gegessen. Eine Delikatesse in Unterschichten bleibt Frust und Essensreste. Oh, eine neue bunte Flecke im Hip-Hop, Lia Shahin. Ich bricke deinen Trap und ball eine fette Show. Seh mich als die frische Schwester, so verfick ich dich mit meinem choralen Orchester im Flow. Lebe ich nun meinen Traumjob, Lia Shahin. Ich scheiß auf Schwanzrap und cutter die Frequenz so. Lass die Zeck die süße Schwester und vergiss bloß nicht mein orales Orchester. Orales Orchester, Beatbox-Schwester oder einfach nur Abla Beatbox-Phänomen. Ich spiel am Tabla so rhythmisch und schlagbar banales Geschwätz in der Szene, als wären sie 15-Jährige. Überlege, was für ein Gerede, peinliches Gepredige. Bitches, Geld, Karren, schnelles Fame, ballern als Rechtfertigung, nutzen diese Lutscher ihre armen Mütter aus. Argumentativ, dass die Familie Geld braucht und verbreiten so viel Elend in ihrem Goldrausch. Schau dir mal die Trans am Rand der Gesellschaft, eine Künstlerin sich wenigstens als Mensch Gehör schafft für nur Community. Offen gesagt scheiß ich auch auf die Ficken sich selbst gut genug. Hör mal, ich benenne sie. Werde sowieso nach oben schaffen, doch will ich das? Bremse konstant meine Karriere, was bringt mir das? Ich glaube Ruhe und konstante, langsame Entwicklung, langsame Schritte in Richtung das große Game. Sonst werde ich irgendeine narzisstische Bitch vollgepackt mit Skills, dass mir niemand was sagen kann, will das nicht. Bin ich aber auch nur ein Produkt? Wurde ich angespuckt, alle mich nur angeguckt. Kein Hurensohn hat mich unterstützt. Smartboards wurden aufgedrückt. Und genau das ist das Problem. Sonst hat sich auch kaum jemand um dich gekümmert. Verkümmert, systemisch zertrümmert. Doch, wo führt das hin? Black Lives Matter, Trans Lives Matter, Muslim Lives Matter, Refugee Lives Matter, Jew Lives Matter, POC Lives Matter. Sonst zerschmettern wir Minderheiten, ein System, ist das besser? Black Lives Matter, Queer Lives Matter, Muslim Lives Matter, Refugee Lives Matter, Disabled Lives Matter, POC Lives Matter. Sonst zerschmettern wir Minderheiten, ein System, ist das besser?
just wanna go to work and get back home and be something. I just wanna fall in line and do my time and be something. Well, I just wanna prove my worth on the planet Earth and be something. I just wanna fall in love and not fuck it up and feel something. But lately, don't understand what I am. Treated as a fool, not quite a woman or a man. Well, I don't know, I guess I don't understand the plan. Colonized and hypnotized, be something. Sterilized, dehumanized, be something. Well, take your pay and stay out the way, be something. Ah, do your best, but fuck the rest, be something. Well, lately, it's been mighty hard to see. Just searching for my lost humanity. I look for you, my friend, but do you look for me?
To kill the landlord of their cracked skulls and communicate with their Latin souls. Juan, Miguel, Milagro, Olga, Manuel, from the nervous breakdown streets where the mice live like billionaires and the people do not live at all.